Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Formed in 1931, the Lake of the Ozarks offers 1,150 miles of shoreline and a weekend refuge for so many hardworking Kansas Cityans. It's a Missouri jewel, and it's also something else. Endangered. The problems are well known. Concerns about water quality, the loss of natural habitat for wildlife, and sewer systems that need vast upgrades. Tracy Angel has ventured full tilt into a topic that few in the Ozarks want to discuss, and she's done it in a new book, The Scars of Project 459, The Environmental Story of the Lake of the Ozarks. Tracy Angel's a former Associated Press reporter and an editor at St. Louis Magazine, and so good to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Later on this hour, we'll talk World Cup soccer with Chance Myers of Sporting KC and Francis Silva of FC Kansas City. But Tracy, people wonder, you know, about water quality down at the lake and just how safe that water is to swim in. You bottom line it this way in the book: while the lake might not be horrible or unsafe for swimmers or fish, it has problems. Does that sum it up pretty well?
Yes, it does. It's mentioned in the book. The coves are the problems.
Yeah.
There are, like you had mentioned, the septic tanks that are outdated and the sewer systems that might be inadequate. But those are just two of the culprits of water quality. There are also other detrimental environmental effects, such as the endangered species,
right,
and the other nutrients, the phosphorus, the nitrogen, that are other forms of pollution that can cause problems for the ecosystem there.
And the coves tend to be the problem because why the water is more stagnant
back there. That's where it's congested.
Yeah,
yes,
right.
Yes, that's where the homes are. That's where everything is running off into the water, or the coves there. And unfortunately, that is also where a lot of people do their swimming off docks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the concerns.
You know, a few years ago, as you well know, and you write about it so well in the book, there was this E. coli outbreak at the lake and lots of concerns and a controversy involving the Nixon administration. You know, have there been E. coli outbreaks in recent years? Because it seems that, to some extent, that issue has sort of faded away.
You know, the E. coli study was part of a five-year study that the Department of Natural Resources and volunteers from the watershed group coordinated. That the results came out in 2011, and since then there hasn't been much, but I understand they're revisiting some of those coves that had higher numbers this summer, 2014. And some of the recent numbers I've seen are low. I'm not sure of the methods they're using and which coves they're targeting, but they have, as I understand it, tried to put some things in place to mitigate what was going on in some of those coves. So it'll be interesting to see what these results are after the summer and what coves they highlighted and what happened, maybe why.
You know, it sounds like you're suggesting that where they do their tests and how they do their tests might be factors in determining whether, in fact, there's a problem down there or not. And you begin to wonder, it's not hard to manipulate some of this stuff?
I hate to accuse anyone, but yes, you know, in the scientific method, it would be, you know, you could argue ways of handling the testing. That's for sure.
So that's something for people to keep their minds wrapped around as they look at all this.
I would be interested to see the methods behind this testing in 2014. There is a map. If you go to the Department of Natural Resources, it has this testing that started taking place in 2014 and where they're going. But I have not seen, or in a lot of times they do this at the end of the study, you know, how they decided to choose these coves. And I'd be interested to see the results and the discussion after this.
You know, the legislature passed an interesting law last year. In 2013, Tracy, lawmakers adopted a bill that, get this, it prohibits state officials from closing beaches. Instead, they have to post signs at beaches when E. coli levels become high. Why did they pass that bill?
Yeah, and I was just going to say, this might be another reason why you're not hearing about E. coli as much.
Because after of this new law.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The lawmakers behind it, one of them, Rocky Miller, there in the lake area, their argument was that they wanted these standards, these water quality standards, to be up to at the federal level instead of the state level, because they said Missouri has some of the strictest standards. So it loosened the standards a bit. And they, I never saw it publicly, but clearly they're not closing the beaches. And I was told from some business people there that when you do close the beaches, people don't come. So
there is a public relations aspect of that,
of course. And I don't know that anyone pitched that or sold the legislation that way, but that is, I think, the underlying reason.
Well, so clearly the issue then becomes, you know, the people who have economic interest down there, and there are so many, are just desperate to protect the image of the Lake of the Ozarks. At the same time, the things that need to happen to improve water quality, clearly very expensive and going to take a long time to accomplish here. Is there enough being done, in your view, to get the lake safe for future generations in terms of new sewer systems and all those kinds of things that are going to cost so much money?
You know, the Watershed Alliance down there, it's called the Lake of the Ozarks Watershed Alliance, LOA is how they shorten their name. They are engaged. They are helping to put in some sewer systems. They are educating people about this, they call it low-impact landscaping, which is supposed to help the runoff and erosion and pollution. And they are. I think the theme throughout the book, as you might have found, and one of the themes I found in my reporting, was this lack of acknowledging there might be problems, which I think is key in attempting to solve them.
Again, they don't want to acknowledge problems because that'll discourage people like in Kansas City from coming down and spending a weekend down there.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the other thing that really struck me about your book, and I've come in running into this myself in some of the reporting that I've done, how willing were Nixon administration officials to talk to you about this? How willing were folks down around the lake to talk to you about what's happening there? Are people open about this or not? Because I think I know the answer.
On the record, they were not so much. And public officials, that was 2012 and re-election year for Nixon. So I did not receive much. But some of the business community, they did allow me to interview them. And some of them did tell me in confidentiality some things. They didn't want to be quoted because, of course, backlash from their peers. But I really don't.
You didn't get the sense from reading your book that public officials were eager to talk to you about this.
No, they were not. No, government officials definitely not, especially after the 2009 political fallout of the state agency, where many of the people are not around from there. And then the others who are a bit timid about touching that subject because of, yes, the stigma of it.
Yeah. Tracy Angel is our guest. We're talking about her very good new book, The Scars of Project 459, The Environmental Story of the Lake of the Ozarks. I'm wondering, what kind of image do you think the lake has these days? Are you willing to go down there and spend a weekend with your family or not? 816-235-2888 is our number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Now, Tracy, can I ask, would you go swimming down in the lake today?
You know, I've thought about this for a little bit.
Yeah.
It was about 10 years ago that I jumped off a boat and swam there. And
you survived? You're here?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah. And I was not ill. And I quickly got back up on the boat for whatever reason. But I think there would have to be a pretty good reason for me to get in right now, knowing what I know. And
what I know, too, and having read your book and done some other reporting on this when all this blew up in 2009, I know it sort of would cross my mind. Do I want to go down there and swim or not? I'd hesitate a little bit.
Yeah, and that's it. Hesitation. I would never say never, but it would have to be a good reason.
Is marine life in danger down there, and should people be eating fish that are caught there?
You know, I've been told that the fish are fine. And I've also seen it in some reports. They did have some problems a few decades ago, but I haven't seen anything recently. As far as endangered species, the Nyangwa darter is the one fish, and there's also lake sturgeon, that are threatened on lists state and federally. Outside of the water, there are other birds, migratory birds and such. Their habitats are being enclosed on with the development.
Yeah. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Tracy, maybe this is a good time to wrap some context around this whole topic of the Lake of the Ozarks. I mean, this is not this is a private lake, right?
Yes.
It's run and owned by a utility company.
Correct.
Why? And its utility is Ameren, right?
Right, Ameren. Well, as part of the federal licensing agreement to operate Bagnell Dam, Ameren controls and owns the shoreline and the reservoir, the lake, around it. So that's how it works under the licensing agreement.
The lake was built, was it built at least in part to become a power source for future generations of Missourians?
That is what its intention was originally. And after they built it, I believe, then those who were around the lake realized this, this is our shoreline here in the Midwest. We have 1,150 miles of this. Let's make this a vacation destination, cash in on this.
And the problem over the years has been, there hasn't been a lot of strict oversight in terms of development down there, right? There are tons of homes, tons of condos, tons of apartments. How many? What are we looking at today?
I've heard numbers, estimates of 75,000 residents or...
75,000 residents wrapped around that lake. Yeah. And that's where the issue becomes.
Correct.
Yeah.
And like you said, that lack of oversight, that lack of a development plan over the years, it's just slowly crept up and maybe more so in the 80s and 90s when there was the boom.
Which is so typical of the way Missouri sort of operates, sort of a hands-off approach to government. That's sort of the culture in Jefferson City. It's the culture in Missouri. And you're seeing that very much play out at the Lake of the Ozarks.
That's very true. And you can tell from the political implications of the previous years.
Okay, 816-235-2888 is our number here. I'm going to grab a phone call. Why don't you grab some headphones there, Tracy, and you can hear Vanessa, our first caller here. Vanessa from Odessa, Missouri. Good morning, Vanessa.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment on the swimming, and you were talking about wondering whether it was safe or not. My family is a big boating family. We've gone down there for the past two seasons, and we were actually camping on some of the more unlived on coves, in the conservation areas. I talked to one of the conservationists at one of the cave sites, asked her if it was safe to swim down there. She said she would say it was okay, so I let my family swim, and promptly my son was gotten sick with a bladder infection. We believe it definitely had a link to the cove. Had I known better, I would not have sent him in there. It was pretty serious, and I just wanted to make that comment because it's still happening. I don't know why it's not reported. I don't know why people aren't talking about it, but it's serious, and it was a big deal to get him cured from that, whatever was going on.
Wow.
And I'm sure it was linked to exactly what I was talking about was swimming in that cove and exposure to that water, unfortunately.
How long was he sick, Vanessa?
Well, probably a few weeks. I finally had to call a friend of mine is a holistic practitioner, and it got to the point where it was so serious with urinating and all that kind of stuff that I wanted to know what I could do right away. She hooked us up with something that they do with herbs. I can't remember exactly the herb she prescribed. I think it was something fairly common like parsley, but we went on a pretty serious, regimen and got it taken care of quickly. But, like I said, I went down there for fun. It's a beautiful place, beautiful animals. Had I known and had I, the condition of the water beforehand, I would have never, allowed him to swim in the water, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Vanessa, I appreciate the phone call. Thanks for giving us a call.
Thank you. Appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, you bet. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. The lake opened in 1931, Tracy. Construction on it began a couple of years earlier. It provided 2 years of work for thousands during the Great Depression. Even so, there was opposition to it even then. One publisher, Joshua William Vincent, this is from your book, he wrote this: "Some believe that money cannot compensate for destruction of some of the world's choicest beauty spots to make way for rotting fester in the heart of our state, which even time cannot cure." How much opposition to the dam was there even back in those days?
He was probably the most outspoken one. And of course, as editor of the newspaper, he had that platform. But the residents of Lynn Creek actually tried to have an injunction against the building of the dam, and they did so unsuccessfully. It was hard to stop that. One of the other prominent oppositions to the dam was the Snyder family from Kansas City. Their trial was notorious and helped, I think, bring that issue to light. So they were one of the more notable opposers.
Yeah, what did the Snyder family of Kansas City go through there? Because they had this huge struggle to get what they thought was fair compensation. And what happened there?
Yes, they had this beautiful estate. It's now Haha Tonka State Park with this castle-like.
It's this castle in the middle of the park,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And they didn't think they were going to be fairly compensated for the easement that was required for the dam. And I think they were offering them $140,000, and they thought the property was worth much more than that. They even brought in a famous witness. It was the sculptor of Mount Rushmore who could talk about the aesthetics and estimated the land to be worth $1.5 million at the time, which was a lot of money. They ended up in court receiving about $300,000, I think, but what they actually got was much less because of legal fees and court costs.
Well, Tracy, when this lake was built, whole towns disappeared, families forced out of their homes, forced off their farms by the rising water when the water backed up behind the dam there. What type of compensation did folks get for their homes and properties? Because I read in your book as low as $35 an acre. They didn't get much.
That's the estimation, and that's what I've read in a few of the historical records. And no, that wasn't much at all. And just to be uprooted and have to find some sort of life or livelihood elsewhere.
So folks may be taken advantage of back
exactly.
in those days.
Yeah.
The health and the future of the Lake of the Ozarks is our guest. Tracy Angels is our guest, is our topic today. Tracy Angels, our guest. Her book, The Scars of Project 459, The Environmental Story of the Lake of the Ozarks. Back to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Julia, good morning. Nice to have you.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I live on the Lake of the Ozarks on the Osage Arm.
Mm-hmm.
That's the 52.5-mile marker, a small cove that has just two homes on it. And I was curious, I have not read your book, but what if you could tell me, which are they targeting further down towards the dam? Because obviously I'm up more towards Warsaw.
Are who targeting? What, you mean with the testing?
Yes, the particular coves that they are. Are they further down towards Bagnell Dam? Because I'm up on the 52.5.
Yes, I just recently looked at the map, and I'm sure they're going to be doing this testing through the summer. I do not believe they are where you are at this time. But you look at the...
I do a lot of swimming, so I want to make sure I can still do my swimming.
Right. I'm sorry I don't know that off the top of my head. But if you want to look at that information of where they are doing the testing is at the Missouri Department of Natural Resources, their website. And if there's a link there to water quality at the Lake of the Ozarks. So if you...
Okay, thank you. Well, I look forward to reading your book, and thank you for taking my time.
Julia,
okay.
Good to
thank
have you.
You
here. Is that information readily accessible to Missourians? If they want to go look at the water quality at the lake, they go to the DNR website, and how clear is the information that's presented there?
And they do have a summary from the 2011, the five-year study that finished, and then there have been a couple other studies that they've posted there. And like I said, the recent numbers from this 2014 revisiting is there as well.
Mm-hmm.
The summaries are fairly clear as far as looking at data. I mean, that's a personal, you might need some interpretation, but it's your state agency. I would hope that they could answer questions if you have some, especially if you're a lake resident.
But you can get a fairly clear view, you're saying, by going on the website and taking a look at what the information is there.
Right. Yeah. And but again, as we discussed earlier in the conversation, you know, which coves they've targeted and that might, you know, limit as you know, what you're going to glean from that.
Yeah. You know, in 2009, when all this sort of blew up and there was the E. coli outbreak and some beaches closed and people were very upset about it, you know, there was a lot of press, a lot of information at that time, Tracy, about how much runoff was going directly into the lake, some sewage being poured directly into the lake. Has all that been addressed, or is it still happening down there?
Or do we know? After that political fallout, if you will, the Attorney General's office, they did have that symposium where they discussed this and they came out with recommendations. And then they also made their own report about the status of the lake. And they addressed many of the wastewater facilities that were non-compliant. And I think they're staying on track of that a little bit more from what I understand.
But there's still sewer systems that are non-compliant
right,
down there.
Right, exactly. And, you know, a personal septic tank, how is one to know if it's leaching mm-hmm. into the soil and maybe running off? And that's where I think the watershed group is trying to educate people about updating this. And
are inspections going on? Are there state inspectors who go around and say, you know, this property is in compliance, this property is not? I mean, is there a sense of urgency attached to all of this?
Well, here is one of the challenges are the jurisdictions, of course. So it's county health inspectors that actually go and investigate these smaller, the residents, the septic mm-hmm. tanks, as we mentioned, and the Missouri Department of Natural Resources is in charge of inspections at the wastewater facilities and the larger the condos and the restaurants and some of the larger. It's all by gallons per day of.
Mm-hmm. And your point is there's different jurisdictions that might have different standards that are all at play here.
Well, it just makes it challenging to find out if you do have a problem, you know, where does one go, or if you notice something, if you're a resident down there, you'd call this state, I guess. For something larger, or if you call your county health department, if you see your neighbor with a problem.
Do you have any sense, is there sewage still being poured directly into the lake? Does that still happen there?
Yes. One of my final interviews was with a health inspector, and she did tell me that, you know, she gave me a few anecdotal stories just in our conversations over a few weeks of her visits to places where there was sewage, yes.
She's entering seeing problems.
Yes, she was still seeing problems.
Because, again, I'm viewing all this from 10,000 feet away. I'm not down there. I don't mm-hmm. really know what's
sure.
happening. But is there a sense of urgency, you know, in the culture around the lake of people saying, we better clean this up or more radio shows like this are going to be conducted and there's going to be more and more problems with the tourist traffic down there?
I don't think so. In fact, I think what you're seeing is that there's this need to put the most positive light on everything.
Positive it's not, spin as yes, opposed to it, really it, fixing the issues it, down there.
Exactly. And so, yes, they're educating people with the hope that they're going to, you know, get it together and fix these problems, but they still aren't saying, here are the problems. You know, they're trying to do it almost indirectly, but yes, with this public relations campaign of everything's fine, the water's fine. And using studies and such to their advantage.
Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about Lake of the Ozarks with Tracy Angel and her book, The Scars of Project 459, the environmental story of the Lake of the Ozarks. We'll talk about what the EPA has said about this, what the state is doing, and we'll take your questions, too, at 816-235-2888. Michelle, hang on, Rick. I'll be with you in just a minute. And later on this hour, we'll talk World Cup. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're talking with Tracy Angel about the Lake of the Ozarks and her new book, The Scars of Project 459, The Environmental Story of the Lake of the Ozarks. You know, Tracy, in 1931, Time magazine foresaw the popularity of what it called the largest artificial lake in the world. What did having such a large body of water, you know, what did it mean for Missourians in places like Kansas City and St. Louis? It was a big deal.
Yes, it was a big deal because it meant you didn't have to go to the coast now for your shoreline. You could, you know, just drive a few hours and you'd be right on the water. And mm-hmm. it also, I think it provided we had talked about the real estate opportunity of you could maybe have that beachfront, you know, second home or even take the family there for a getaway.
When did people first start seeing problems that you talk about in the book, problems with concerns over water quality and habitat for wildlife and that kind of thing?
You know, I as part of the book, it's a historical and scientific look. As early as the 1970s, there was a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers study that started mentioning that there could be problems with this development. And even then in the 80s and 90s, the Department of Natural Resources would come out with these reports that indicated some of these coves were a bit clustered and they needed to maybe do something or pay attention, or the water quality.
So we're going back 30, 40 years here. I mean, this is nothing new here. These warnings have been around for a while.
Right.
People down at the lake, the chambers of commerce, the homeowners, and those business owners, they've known there are issues coming here.
And they've even sponsored some of the studies. Some of the business owners in the late 90s got together an engineering study to find out what exactly they needed to do when these new wastewater regulations came up. And it indicated, you know, maybe we need better sewer systems.
Okay. Back to some phone calls. 816-235-2888 is our number here. What image do you have of the Lake of the Ozarks these days? Would you go swimming down there or would you hesitate? That's the question on the table. 816-235-2888. Let's go to Rick from Independence. Rick, you're on the show.
Well, good evening, or good morning. Yes, we get in the water every time we're down there, weekly, usually. I wouldn't hesitate getting in it, nor do our children, guests' children. I think it's a bit alarmist, and that's the kind of word I could put on it, that someone is advocating or suggesting that they would not get in the water.
Okay.
That would be my first comment.
Great. Go ahead. What's your next one?
The water is cleaning up. It is every summer. Anyone that spends any time on the lake can see it. The standards on the developers, what they're having to do as far as treatment facilities, sewers are coming to the lake. The city of Osage Beach is getting sewers. So it's getting better. It's not getting worse. And anyone that can see the otherwise, I don't think is really looking at all the facts.
Rick, I'm glad to have your comments. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to Michelle from Northeast Kansas City. Michelle, welcome to Up to Date.
Good morning, Steve. I literally just came back from the lake at 8 o'clock this morning.
Yeah.
We had an issue with a neighbor above us, we live at the bottom of a hill, digging his own septic tank. So we called the county, Benton County. I got to say, I love their employees. The employees are very concerned about what goes on, but there's a grandfather clause. This guy can have his septic tank be a 50-gallon barrel, and there's nothing we can do about it because the property's been there for more than 15 years.
Hmm.
So the concern is that the public officials are concerned that their hands are tied by legislation. And the people that live down there, I mean, Benton County is the poorest county in the state of Missouri. They can't afford to update their septic system. So there's that battle between poor people against regulation. But I don't get in the water. I let my dogs do it, but I don't get in it.
Yeah,
that's all I have to say.
Michelle, I'm glad you called. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
You know, your failure to regulate growth and development has created all these headaches for Amber and Tracy over the years. And the biggest headache came when the company looked to get relicensed by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission back in 2007. What was the commission insisting upon back in those days?
Well, they were needing this shoreline plan, and it creates this buffer that's supposed to preserve the environmental and the recreational usage of the lake.
A buffer between the actual
water
line
and where
development can begin, where a house can be built.
Exactly.
Okay. And when Ameren submitted its plan, you know, a bunch of property owners, like 1,500 of them, got quite a shock, which was what?
And they realized they didn't own the land where their home or residence was.
And they didn't own it because?
Because over the years, developers or surveyors and title companies had sold and plotted these pieces and parcels on the boundary, which was owned by Ameren, and either no one was looking or no one really cared.
So what's going to happen? What's the consequence for those 1,500?
Well, the Federal Regulatory Commission did work out a deal with the utility company that said, okay, it's 662, and then they carved out where some of these structures are, so nothing will have to be torn down. But who owns the land is still up in the air, and as I understand it, some landowners and residents have sued the company, and the hearings were starting this week, I believe, in Camden County. So I think this litigation and questions about property rights are going to go on for years to come.
Hmm. You know, in 2009 was a rough year for the Missouri DNR. The E. coli rates spiked, the beaches were closed, and then the Nixon administration, its own credibility was called into question. Remind us what happened that year.
Well, the watershed group and DNR, they were doing these samplings in the coves, and what happened was they had some really high counts, and it was right around the time of the Memorial Day weekend.
A big tourist weekend.
Yes, a big, huge tourist weekend. And as I understand it, some members of the watershed group and others asked to release the data, as it was always released right after the testing, and the state ended up not releasing it until a few weeks after the holiday. And when confronted with
why
this happened, the Department of Natural Resources did say that the tourism and there were economic reasons as to why they did not release the data, which caused even more problems for the people involved in the agency and in the Nixon administration.
Hmm. You know, I'm drawn back to the phrase you use in the prologue of this book of a body of water being loved to death. What a great phrase. People come to the Lake of the Ozarks because they love the boating or the fishing or what scenery they see there. But the sheer numbers of folks bring problems that's killing the source of the very thing they love down there. How do we break the cycle without killing off people's livelihoods, or can we?
You know, I think someone who reads the book that would see that it's actually hopeful. I mean, you can repair sewer systems. You can stop pollution.
But it's got to start happening.
But it has to start happening. And then getting back to the acknowledgement that this is happening is key to doing so, because it doesn't really help anyone if we're not saying there is a problem to be fixed. So,
yeah. Tracy Angel's a new book again, The Scars of Project 459, The Environmental Story of the Lake of the Ozarks. What a pleasure to have you. Thanks for sharing your insights into this issue. We sure appreciate it, Tracy.
Thank you for having me.